You are listening to the In Context podcast. Welcome to the In Context podcast. This week you may be confused and think that we're doing an episode of Loose Women. We're not. This is a podcast featuring Rachel, Sue and Jude, and we're going to be discussing single parents, in particularly what it's like to be a single parent in the church. So thank you very much for joining us, Sue, Jude and Rachel.
Hi.
Normally not this quiet. Good to have you on board. For those of you who don't know, Sue B is my mother. She's my mum. She was a single parent back in the 80s. She had a wonderful time because she had two angelic children who were just a total blessing to her and made life so much easier for her. So how did you find it, Mum, growing up in the 80s? Especially being a Christian as a single mum, because you were a first-generation Christian. You moved to a council estate, which you weren't from, and then the reason you moved there was because you were part of a church, weren't you? So you joined the church as a single mum, didn't you? How was that for you?
Hard. It was hard being a single mum and working. Single mum with two boys, but living somewhere I didn't really want to live, in a sense. I don't know what else to say, to be honest.
Yeah, it was just a struggle. It was tough.
It was tough.
So those were things that would have been tough anyway, wouldn't they? Moving to it. Council estate that you weren't part of, being on your own, raising two boys who were quite energetic, I suppose, be the polite way of putting it. And but how was it? So you had those practical issues that were difficult to deal with, but how was it in church? What kind of reception did you have in the church? Because back in the 80s, single parents were few and far between within the church. Today, I think statistically, divorce and single parents pretty much the same as in society now as it is within the church, but back in the 80s it was quite different, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't feel supportive. There was a family who were very supportive, but I didn't feel supported by the general congregation. I think I probably felt more supported as a single person as opposed to family. I made friends as a woman, but it was difficult being a single parent in the church, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so you have friends that you could relate to, that you could meet with and have coffee with, but doing things as a family, what, family days out and meals and things like that, are you thinking of? And
yeah, there was one particular family that included us and invited us for meals and was very supportive and lived around the corner from us. But apart from them, I don't feel that or remember that we were included in things as a family, apart from that situation.
And again, that was a church that was on a council estate, but predominantly the majority of people would travel into that council.
Yeah.
So they were local to us, whether they were travelling in.
Yeah.
But the one family that was on the estate kind of took us under the wing.
Yeah. They were really supportive. I don't think without their support and encouragement, it would have. They helped a lot. I think it would have been difficult without them. I probably might not have continued, to be honest. But I see that sort of relationship with Jude and Rachel. And that's lovely to see that Jude is supported in that way. That's how I see it anyway, that what I got from this family, I see you providing, you as a family providing to Jude.
That's good. And Rachel, So you were providing support to a single mum. You're not single now. You're married to me. You're a pastor's wife. Well, what was your experience? Because before we were married, you were a single mum, weren't you? What was your experience?
Yes, similar to Sue. Very much feeling isolated, feeling alienated. I remember, because Hannah was only, you know, tiny, but going into what was the creche, freezing cold, no audio, no nothing, being just really worn out from general looking after a little one. And had it not been for one individual, that couple, who had their own things going on, really, but they were very supportive. So sometimes she would come in the creche and just sit with me, couldn't hear anything. In the end, I used to just think, well, I may as well just stay at home and watch Songs of Praise because I can't hear anything. It was almost stressful going, freezing cold, no heating. And yeah, I just felt very much out on a limb. People felt awkward, didn't know what to kind of say. And yeah, it was like Sue said, it was tough. And sort of wider than that, when I'd go to conferences, I felt because being overprotective, maybe I felt this expectation to. I didn't want Hannah going off to crash situations and things, and I felt like people were looking at me, you know, if she was all over the place. I just felt very, you know, judged, and some of that would have been my own judgments or whatever. It wouldn't have been all them, but very much I did feel from a place of having some kind of friends within the church to this situation, like a bit of a stigma, and people didn't want to maybe ask me around because I don't know why, but I'm assuming because it was an awkward situation and people just didn't know what to say, really.
So we've seen that Sue felt socially outside the church, regarding from not as an individual, she had friends, but socially she felt that she didn't fit in as a family. There was one family that took her under her wing, and the biggest problem you had was actually in the church service itself, being shut in the back in a little room out the back. So I think the actual church experience for you, Sue, that was pretty good, was it? Just the actual church service. How did you find that? Was that welcoming?
It's like what Rachel said. You feel uncomfortable, especially, you know, taking two boisterous boys to a service. Are they going to sit quiet? Are they misbehaving, people looking at you? But yeah, I can relate with what you said, Rachel, that sometimes it was easier to think not to go.
You've made the kind of, not the effort, but you've sort of got there, and then I was sort of going because it was the right thing to do, but then getting there, and then it just, I thought, what's the point just sitting here? I can just sit at home in a heated room. Just not the church service, but obviously everything was geared, house group was geared to evenings, so it meant I couldn't go to them because I couldn't get there. There was no, and sure, that wasn't like, obviously none of these things are deliberate or intentional, but you just, by the default of the way that the church, some churches are set up, you end up being on the fringe. Because you just can't go to things, you don't have people to look after. I didn't have, my mum and dad were living away at the time, my sister didn't live, I didn't have people I could call upon to go on, so I could go off to a house group or, and often during the day ones were like older people. They wouldn't have wanted necessarily a little one running around. I'd have felt, you know, off to go to that. And it was all older people anyway. So I wouldn't have felt comfortable within that. So you just become, just because I think my situation ostracized me without even anyone intentionally doing anything or not doing anything. It was just a setup. Mm. And then because I kind of was close to this family anyway, and they had a granddaughter the same age, there was a natural connection there. And so...
What, a granddaughter the same age as you?
A daughter the same age and a granddaughter the same age as Hannah. And so, yeah, they obviously felt compassion, and would invite me round or look after Hannah when I was at work. So I was working full time as well. So yeah, I think when you haven't, again, first generation Christian, I didn't have my family, I didn't have Christian brothers and sisters, just even though I was wanting some kind of discipleship or whatever, it just wasn't there, and because purely couldn't access anything. Mm. So similar problem, maybe without that family just, you know, encouraging me and different point, if I was had something on my mind or something had gone on in the middle of the night, I could ring them. Those types of things, really.
So what you have then is we see isolation, and it was difficult for you to be part of the church community. There was like one family for both of you that took you under your wings. For you, Sue, there was a family that lived locally who took you into the home and made you feel welcome. But the wider the wider church meant that you didn't really fit in. And then the same with you, Rachel. And from what it sounds like, is geography plays a part, because the majority of people in the church lived a couple of miles away. The family that you were associating with lived just a couple of streets away, but also the way the church was set up just wasn't geared to provide the support that was needed to single parents, whether it was the times of meetings or the types of meetings that they had. So that was back in the 80s, and then the early 2000s for you, Rachel, as things changed, have you got a similar story, Jude, or have things been different for you?
Oh, no, things have been really different for me. I was part of New Life Church when I became a single mum. I moved over and lived moved locally to the church, and I just had a completely different experience. I think the way our church is set up helps. There's not just families, there's single people, single and older people. There's a whole sort of a range of families, single people, older people, isn't there? So I think that helps. And also everybody in our church has just been so supportive, and just completely different experience. I've never obviously you feel isolated because you're a single parent. That comes with feeling isolated at times. Obviously that's part of, I think, being a single parent, but I've never felt on my own. I've never felt alone at all. I've just felt completely included in the church. And like just little examples, like I remember when we could have Bible study, and obviously I couldn't, having three quite young children, I couldn't get out in the evening. And so we started having it here. And I think because we're a smaller church, we're able to do that. Obviously in a bigger church, it might be difficult, but that was amazing for me, just to be able to, to be able to have Bible study here and for the children to be a part of it. And like I remember at Christmas, I think it was the first Christmas I was on my own, and you invited me, Sue. I think you remember on Christmas Day. It was the first like Christmas Day that I hadn't had the children, and so we went to Sue's for tea and then back to your house, Rachel and Ian, and I slept over and things like that. I mean, they're just invaluable, really. It like makes a massive difference for me. So I've had a completely different experience of it. Yeah, and I'm so grateful for, you know, I feel really grateful because I know it's quite unique, really. I don't think many people would have the experience that I've had.
Yeah. I don't want to risk us trying to put this out to say, aren't we brilliant?
Oh, no, completely.
But I think one of the benefits we've had as a church is the pastor's been raised by a single parent. Yeah. His wife was a single parent, and his mum, who is a member of the church, has also been a single parent. So we've got a lot of understanding of things that were done badly, so we can try and address those problems. The church was birthed out of 68.5. which was a charity which worked with fatherless children and supported lone parents. And so because of that, the ethos of the church was already based on Psalm 68, verse 5, about being a father to the fatherless and a defender of the widows. So that was something very much in the heart of the church and the ethos of the church when it was planted. So I think having a ministry that was already reaching single parents and fatherless children as a massive benefit, doesn't it, to keeping that ethos going throughout the church. Plus, we live in a matriarchal society, so some of our estates are 60% lone parent households, predominantly women. So even our community, because we all live in the same community within walking distance of one another, that means that, again, we're all part of the same community. It's a lot of the activities we do are relational and community-based anyway. So a lot of churches aren't geared that way, especially for people like drive-in churches. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to replicate that. So we're not here today to say we are perfect, you've got everything wrong. What we're trying to say is we've learned through personal experience, plus also making mistakes ourselves as a church. Because as a church, we're not perfect, are we, Jude? So what are some of the obstacles or difficulties you've faced within a church that, even though we are geared to support lone parents, what obstacles do you still find?
I think it's always hard to be in church on your own with your children. That's always, you know, like thinking, oh, are they going to misbehave? Are they going to make a noise? Are they going to, you know, I think that's when you're doing it on your own and you're trying to spread yourself between the three of them, I think that's always hard. I think, like I said, loneliness and isolation, you feel, I think the majority of people, if they're on their own, feel anyway, single parents. And I think the biggest thing for me that I've learned is that the church can't replace what I've lost. The church can't heal all your pain. It's only Jesus can do that. And I think people continually pointing you to Jesus, that's you know, vital, isn't it? He's the only one that, you know, when you're on your own, you cry out to him, don't you? And he's the only one that can sort of heal that inner pain. So I think that's what I've learned as well, that the church can't be your saviour. Only Jesus can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is so true. And we can look at some of the churches that aren't geared up to support single parents. Like we say, back in the 80s, it was very few and far between that. You would have maybe one single parent. Now, like we say, I think statistics show that there's a lot of lone parents in churches. And I want to be clear that lone parents aren't just through separation or divorce or abandonment. We have people are lone parents for numerous reasons. Husbands or wives might work away. There's refugees who've come into the country and had to leave husbands or wives in another country. there's people who have been imprisoned, and like you say, people that become lone parents because of death. So the stereotype of single parents is terrible. I think that the country portrays that there's just one type of single parent. There's so many different reasons for people bringing children up on their own, and each reason means that there's different problems and different areas of pain that needs addressing for both the child and for the parent. So we are by no means experts, but I think we gear ourselves up to protect parents and to provide support for them. And I think the danger that we have as a church, Rachel mentioned it earlier before we came on air, was treating people like projects. You just mentioned there, Jude, that the greatest thing we can do is point you to Jesus. But so often we're tempted to be the saviour as a church and to fix problems and treat you as a project, not you in particular, Jude, but I think Christians in general often struggle with this Messiah complex. And have you come across that, Rachel, yourself, when people were trying to support you? And have you even had the temptation to replace Jesus yourself when helping others?
Yeah, I think it's never a position that you want to make someone feel like you're, like you say, like they are a project. But you obviously, because often these things are motivated out of love and compassion. They don't come from a place of malice. But you can end up almost, you can become just a different. Women that I've worked with over the years, off the estate or whatever, it's sometimes hard to leave to know what's going on in their situation and to leave that, because obviously you're emotionally involved. You've grown to love the kids and the woman, and it's learning. And I, as you know, I've struggled with it, and you've got to keep reminding me. You've got to leave it with Jesus. You've got to leave it with Jesus. I think as women, we get more emotionally involved in things probably than men. Men find it easier not to switch off, not to detach. But sometimes things can go around in my head and I can take it on board as my own kind of problem. And then it's remembering, isn't it, that actually you have to just leave it with God. You can do what you do practically. You can pray for people and point them to Jesus, and you yourself have to kind of leave it at that place. Otherwise, you'd go crazy because, you know, particularly in our context, it's not like one person. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of need, and you've got to come to a place of accepting that, you know, you're not the saviour, thankfully, in the situation. Jesus is.
And again, I think we've mentioned that churches have failed lone parents and lone parent families. I think the biggest problem has been lack of preparedness, lack of awareness, or a bit like last year with the pandemic, where we weren't prepared for a pandemic. So we spent the first couple of months struggling to get PPE and ventilators, whereas if we'd have already been geared up for a pandemic, we'd have had these things in reserve. We could have dealt with the issue sooner. Whereas I think a lot of churches, because they don't have a certain demographic within the church, they don't prepare for them coming. So even if we get a refugee turn up or someone who's homeless, we're like, what do we do? We're not prepared. Whereas I think if as churches we are more geared up, we already have services that are child-friendly and lone parent family-friendly, and we have times of events fitted around different people so they can attend if they've got young children and they've got nobody to look after them. We can have some things to prepare us as a church to welcome lone parents' families in, even if they're not already in our churches, rather than struggling once somebody turns up to try and start something brand new. Very rarely do we find that the response is badly. It's an individual or a church's response to the lone parent that is bad. But it does happen, doesn't it? Can you give any examples of how people have discriminated against you because of your status of being a lone parent?
Well, just as I say, when I what distinctly I remember is when I went to that particular conference, and all the kids were in that group, and I didn't want her going in. That was my prerogative. Didn't want her going in that group, and they were saying, "Well, where's your husband? He should be here looking. You know, why can't?"
Because was this a woman's conference that you were at?
Sorry, for anyone, right. Like a family conference, family. So one of them would sit, and she did, and the other one would take them into the conference, you know, and sit with them, and for a little while, and see if they settled. But I didn't want to do that, so I had her with me, and she wasn't even being a problem or whatever. But this person was saying, "You know, where's your husband? He needs to be." And I said, "Oh no, it's not possible. I'm here myself." "What do you mean you're here yourself?" And it was just a big awkward situation. And I just wanted to get out of there. I just thought, I just don't. I looked around and no one, there may have been, but it felt like nobody was in my position. Even the sort of, the way that these so-called family conferences sometimes are set up, it's just got a mum and dad and two kids. That's what it's geared up for, potentially, when they say family. It was just, I just felt really... That's supposed to be my Saturday, where I'm supposed to go, and not only me is supposed to be my time with God, but my daughter. It was just an awful, it kind of had it positive as well, though, because it kind of framed me in terms of, I knew that I'd never ever do that. I probably wouldn't have ever done that anyway, but I was very, very conscious I was never going to do that. Make someone feel that they weren't to be accepted or part of something because they didn't fit what the expectation or whatever. There's lots of little incidents, but that's like a main one, I would say.
That's enough, really, isn't it? I mean, even if that was the only incident, awful to for someone to press that discussion with you and not just leave it when you give the first answer. But Sue, anything for you? Did you relate to anything Rachel said?
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to that. But what I was thinking of was how you were the boys were discriminated against, not included in things, whereas the other children could have been because they were in a family. There's one instance that I can think of, but I'm not going to particularly say what it was, but yeah, they were just as valuable as the other children in the church. Mm. I found that really hard.
Mm. Yeah, what about you, Jude?
I mean, I haven't got any. There's never been a situation like that for me. I think I personally, I've had like people commenting on my situation and sort of judging it without knowing sort of everything, that, you know, all the facts. And I think anyway, you feel quite a lot of guilt, and you feel you feel quite embarrassed about the situation. So I think you're quite sensitive to anybody commenting on your situation. So to be honest, I get quite scared if I'm going anywhere new, like any church new, or any conference or anything like that, in case people ask. But that's probably partly my issue as well, my insecurity.
Yeah, but I do know what you mean, Duke, because there does seem to be, because of having experienced it and talked to the people, there does seem to be a kind of strange, people have this almost, feel they have this right to ask questions in which they wouldn't maybe do in another situation, you know, try to pin you down what's happened, what, you know, like it's just not what you would do in a normal situation. I mean, yet you do have these people come up to you, and, you know, and we're talking about individuals in church who question you, and it already makes what is a really, like you say, and it's not, they're not questioning you because that what comes across as concern. Right. It comes across as judgment, and they're going to recommend this, that, and the other. And it is strange. It is strange. I don't know if it's a power thing. I don't know what it is, but it definitely happens.
Yeah. So we see churches aren't geared up to, they're not geared up to support lone parents or the families. We see churches that maybe have a heart to serve lone parents, but then are looking too practically and not spiritually. I think when we mentioned briefly about the temptation to treat people as projects and to look to serve their practical needs, which is good, which is essential and is what we should be doing, but not at the expense of the discipleship, because ultimately, like Jude said, what people need is Jesus. So what has discipleship been like for you as single parents? How has that looked, and has it been what you needed? Would you have liked to have progressed further, but you were limited though because of your situation? Because we often see single parents in the workplace. We see them getting careers. You were a nurse, Sue, as a single parent. And then, Rachel, you were managing a social services department as a single parent. But we don't often see single parents excelling in Christian ministry. Why do you think that is?
I think there's been a, again, just the stigma. People haven't kind of wanted to approach people anyway. So single people have been overlooked purely on the basis that they are single mothers. I can only speak for single mothers. I don't know if it's happened, perhaps it's happened to single dads. You know, as if they, it feels like as if they would not have the kind of experience to deal with certain things, and because they're not in a family, then that doesn't fit the model of what has to be. And so you know, I know people that are in positions that have been questioned, directly questioned about, why do you think it's your place as a single mum to be given this platform or whatever. I know of those people.
Yeah, I think 20 Schemes do a discussion on that topic, don't they? Is that the person you were thinking of?
I think, yeah, and you know, one or two that have said that, you know, that people are fine sort of, you know, they see someone speaking at a women's conference and it's all good biblical stuff, and then they kind of find out that they're a single parent, and then all of a sudden they've got a different slant on them, and they feel then they go up to them and start questioning about what it's all about, which it's just terrible. So I don't know if people just overlook people in the first place, and then they think it's too much, you know, that's too much to deal with. But you know, why should someone's situation, if they've got a godly standing and members of the church, why should that discount them from being a valuable source to impart biblical teaching and or run Bible studies for women or do anything, really?
No, I know, sorry. I know when you'd first asked me, because I work as the administrator for New Life Church, and I know, Ian, when you'd first mentioned it to me, my first thought was, how can I do that? I'm a single parent. I can't, do you know what I mean? It's like that, I can't do that. I think there's, because there is that stigma, and you feel that stigma, you think, oh, I couldn't work for the church in my situation. But then you look to the Bible, don't you? And you look, you know, Jesus, there's all, you know, the disciples were all sorts of people, weren't they? They had all sorts of backgrounds. They weren't the typical, you know, doctor or teacher, or, you know, there was a tax collector, there was, you know, so when we model Jesus, it shouldn't come into it, should it? But I know I felt that immediately. I couldn't do that. I'm a single parent. I couldn't work for the church. So.
And what about you, Sue?
I don't feel I was discipled at all, really. And you know, I was never given any opportunities to be involved in the church, apart from maybe helping at the coffee morning, which is still a valuable job. But yeah, I don't feel I was offered that opportunity. I feel that I was probably discipled more after I left.
It's again, let's not forget that the church has been really bad at discipling women and using them in ministry anyway. I think that's been one of the biggest failings of the church, is recognizing the gifts of women and using them. But with the added stigma that the church has put upon single parents as well, which again, flipping it, being a single parent isn't a sin. I think what really winds me up is that the parent that's left looking after the child, fulfilling their godly mandate to raise that child in the ways of God in the church, is often looked down upon, when they're the one who are actually flipping it. They're the ones who's doing what God has called them to do. And generally, the person who's left is the one who gets away scot-free. So that is, again, makes my mind boggle. Why is somebody who's trying to raise their children in the church looked down upon by some people? It's mind-boggling. But we even have the fact that whether you're from a stereotypical normal family, that women are generally still overlooked within discipleship and ministry. And that's something that as churches we need to develop, and an area that we wouldn't be doing any ministry at all if it wasn't for our female gospel workers. Living in a matriarchal society where 60% of the estate is are women, then you need female gospel workers to reach those women. And in particular, if we're looking at training working class men to reach working class men with the gospel, how much more should we be training single mums to reach single mums? Like we said at the start of this, the reason why we are better equipped to support single mums in the church is because we have single mums as members and as gospel workers. So that is an advantage to us in reaching the single mums on the estate. But what obstacles do the church, because the church has made mistakes, individuals have made mistakes, and we do need to up our game as churches and as Christians. But what kind of obstacles do you think the churches face when discipling single mums? Because as with anybody that you're discipling, there will be challenges. Can you think of some obstacles that you might have faced, and now you're in a different situation? Do you have any empathy towards the churches who struggled to disciple you in the past? We'll ask that question firstly to you, Sue.
As an older person, I don't want to be too hard on how I felt that I wasn't discipled or included in whatever, because a lot of the church were older, and now as an older person myself, there's not a lot I can do to help and encourage on a physical level. So maybe these other people physically couldn't do it, or they have their own problems or whatever. But I can't do much to help the single parents on a physical level, but I can encourage them by praying for them and being there as an emotional support as well as a spiritual support. So it depends on what you're able to do as well, isn't it, individually.
What kind of obstacles do you think you might have put in the way of people who have tried to help you as a single mum? What kind?
Sorry. I've been very defensive. As we were saying earlier, as mums especially, we like the lioness with our children, aren't we? So maybe if people had tried to have helped, I would see it as a criticism as opposed to as loving help.
Mm.
Because I didn't want people criticising my children, even though they might have been doing it with the right heart. I put barriers up, possibly. Mm. And if people haven't been in that position as being a single parent, maybe they just don't know how to help you or how to deal with the situation.
Yeah, because equally how people have put the foot in it, people might be that concerned about not wanting to put the foot in it that they don't say anything because they don't want to offend. People might be embarrassed and not want to offend, so they just keep quiet. Rachel, you're a bit of a wallflower? You're quite reserved and that, keep your thoughts to yourself. So yeah. I can't imagine you causing anybody any problems, but... Can you see how bevies when people have tried to help you in the past, or that you might have put some obstacles in the way? What difficulties might you have presented people?
Yeah, I can, because like Susie, you're very, very defensive. So someone maybe trying to genuinely help comes across, I'm taking it kind of, or at least I was then, as patronising. You obviously don't think I'm capable. They're obviously talking about me when they go home. I mean, they probably didn't even give me a second thought. And I can even, you know, you even get into your head, like your child's being excluded from other children. Like, I remember that incident, Ian, when them kids were doing ring of roses at church, not our church, the church we were going to, and Hannah was trying to get in the group. These kids were just kids, but for me, they were consciously leaving Hannah out of the group. So I barged over and pushed her. Do you know what I mean? So your mind, you're talking very, in the early days, particularly when things happen, it's very, very, very raw and everything just feels magnified. So it doesn't matter kind of what anyone kind of tries to say constructively. It's blown all out of proportion. So, but I do think there is definitely that. But I think when it's balanced with true relationships with people, I think you can then filter that. So I've observed people who have gone into situations when they don't know that person very well and tried to dictate how to them children, what those children should be doing, and had a really bad response. And then I've gone into the same situation, but known the family that really, really well, supported them, known for years, known the kids, said something exactly the same, but in a different kind of manner. And I know the person and they know my heart. It comes across completely differently. And so a lot of these things are missed in confusion, which people might be genuine to help, because there isn't often that true relationship there. It's like with your own family, you let a lot of stuff go that people that normally wind you, because you think, oh well, you love them, and but because that often isn't in place in church, that's why you become, I think, more defensive. I don't know if you'd agree, Jude.
Yeah, definitely. And I think definitely for me, I'm almost had the attitude, I can do it on my own. I'm fine. I don't need help. Like practical help. Do you know what I mean? I can take care of my kids. I don't need anybody to help me. And I think that again has had to change in me that, it's not, I don't want to be seen as a project or anything like that. So I think, I had to change my, I think a lot of it was kind of a bit of pride that, you know, nobody's, I can do it on my own. So I think over the last few years, you know, it's accepting help if I need it, or asking for help, you know, if I need the kids looking after for an hour or something. Do you know what I mean? It's it takes a lot for me to sort of ask for help. But like you were saying, Rachel, I think when you've got a relationship with people, then you are more, it is like your family, isn't it? You do accept help more, and you do ask for help more, and you don't feel criticized so much, and you take it. When you know somebody loves you and genuinely cares for you and your children, you'll take it if they say, oh, have you thought about doing this, or have you thought about doing that, or, you know, you'll take it a lot better than if a stranger comes and says it to you.
I've just remembered Jude. Ian promised to fix your plug, didn't he? He hasn't done it yet.
It's all right, we're in lockdown.
What plug? Did I really?
I'm not going to ask because I'm too proud, but...
Yeah. I remember saying, I'll help you finish off that bottle of red wine, but I can't remember doing anything about the plug. And again, I think that's the biggest thing, isn't it? What we need as churches, regardless of people's situations, is to be pointing people first to Jesus and being in fellowship with Jesus's people, regardless of the situation. I think community is such a huge thing, building those relationships, strengthening our relationships with Jesus and one another is what cements a church that isn't even equipped to deal with certain situations to deal with them better. If we're loving one another, if we're loving Jesus, then whatever situation we're faced with, we'll deal with it a lot better than we would do ordinarily. And I think the main benefit, what we found in supporting our members, is the fact that we live in such close proximity to one another. And what we find is it's not a rule of the church that you've got to live on the doorstep of the church. But what you find out is you have more benefits the closer to the church you are. You have more benefits because you can interact daily with one another, loving one another, pointing people to Jesus and praying with one another. So again, I think community is a huge thing, trust and the gospel. But we've talked about a lot of raw things, emotional things. I appreciate your honesty. Thanks very much for your time and sharing. Is there anything that any of you would like to share before we finish that you'd like to get across?
Just something Jude said about the children. And I know I felt the same about, are your kids messing on? Are people thinking they're going to be noisy? As an older person, the children bless me. Getting upset now. But to see the children grow in their faith, whoever's children they are, they're such a blessing. So, don't think that's annoying.
You.
Just seeing the children pray, or knowing that they all have their own Bibles, it's just such a blessing, children in churches, which I maybe didn't see as a single parent, that people might have seen you and Andrew like that. Mm. But, you know, as an older person now, they're amazing.
Yeah, and I think just going on from that, to say about children, we've talked obviously about how our feelings as single parents, and then just touching on, I think as churches, understanding that for kids brought up in single parenthood to feel, we want to feel part of a family, but they do too. Mm. They're already feeling potentially like everyone's in a different situation to me, or, you know, they've got it all right there, but we maybe haven't. And so how do we as a church support not just us but the children of these families to feel inclusive and included and not ostracized?
Which almost sets us up perfectly for our next podcast, which we're going to be looking at God being a father to the fatherless and how we can support children in the church who are being raised by lone parent families. Well, thanks very much for joining us, and thank you for listening to the In Context podcast.